Senate File 715, bond off the governor's omnibus higher ed bill. It's here because under the joint rule, it is more than 15 days after the governor submitted his budget. So Senator Pappas moves Senate File 715 be referred to the Higher Ed Committee and Workforce Development Committee. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Senator Schmidt has the Omnibus Agriculture Appropriation Bill, same issue, governor's bill, outside of the 15-day window in the joint rules. Senator Skoy moves Senate File 845 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs, Ag, and Rural Development. That's the policy committee. There's some policy in this bill, so it needs to go to policy before it goes to finance. Any questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Reinert, Senate File 53, Tax Expenditure Advisory Commission Establishment. Tax Expenditures Review and Sunset Provisions. And Senator Skoy, this needs to go to taxes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and this is here because it formed a commission, I think.
Well, let's take a look at it.
It's what a gov ops in this commission.
Have a good weekend.
Well, I guess it's a taxes.
Yes.
It's here because of my wife has been doing chemotherapy and she was in her chemotherapy. It's been going pretty well.
And this is already, Council, this has already been to state and local? So it's here because of Section 2.
State and local, I guess.
Four senators. Bipartisan, two from each party. Any questions on the commission?
Mr. Chair.
Members? Senator Limmer.
Perhaps the author could tell us a little bit, those of us who are not on the tax committee, what would be the purpose of the commission?
Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. The purpose of the commission is kind of twofold. Number one, it's to make one of the recommendations from the tax expenditure task force that was put together 2 years ago. One of the things that they, one of their top recommendations was to create a group of people that would systematically review all of our tax expenditures because, you know, I know members here know they're spending, but it's spending that's not transparent. It's spending we don't reauthorize every 2 years as we do in the rest of the budget. And the original bill called for an automatic sunset of expenditures from the committee. This gives recommendations back to the tax committees in both the House and Senate for their action. But it's a group of people who will, on a regular basis, review the almost 300 tax expenditures and tax code and make recommendations to us on should they continue. And they make those recommendations based on how much does the expenditure cost in tax code. Do we have any evidence that it is incenting the behavior someone thought it would? And then also gives it I think in the bill we have a 12-year, but this periodic review. And, Mr. Chair, just for the part that's before the Rules Committee, it's a commission that includes eight legislators, two from each party in both the House and Senate, with our process of approving in the Senate being slightly different from the House based on the way the Senate typically does it. And, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Bodern can weigh in on this, but we had an A7 amendment in state government that got adopted but didn't make it into the engrossment, correctly reflecting eight legislators instead of the language that says seven. So I think I'm sorry, Senator Limmer, I wandered off your question. I should stop there and see if I...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Just a follow-up. Senator Reinert, so by your testimony, you've claimed that there's a Tax Expenditure Task Force that's already reported to the legislature. And now your proposal is to create a new Tax Expenditure Commission. Just maybe a simple question, why don't we just let the tax committee do this? They have the ability to meet beyond the legislative parameters of a session, and they could go around and do this very same job, travel around to get to have hearings. Why do we need this, once again, another layer of this aspect of governing? Why do we need that?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I agree. I think this is the first time I've ever brought something forward that would create more commissions, task force. I'm not a big fan. But I think the reality is we've not done it. And we're a part-time legislature with many demands. And the idea is, and I respect the work that Jay Kudrowski did on this a couple years ago, and they were very intent on this point, that we have proven incapable of doing it ourselves. And I think we all know that there are many demands on us as part-time legislators. So here would be a group of people whose sole focus was to get at this multi-billion dollar spending that really goes without public review.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either you, Mr. Chairman, or Senator Cohen, we will see this bill in the Finance Committee. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, it would appear to be more of a tax bill than a finance bill. Obviously, if there's a cost, a general fund cost attached, it comes to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
There does appear to be some spending in here. In Section 3, we've got a legislative coordinating commission that's going to provide staff administrative services. Someplace in here I saw where we are going to pay, I think it was some public members of this commission, that we're going to pay them a certain amount of money. I think there's a question of whether or not who are sitting on this are going to receive appropriation something in excess of regular salary. I just wonder if there isn't a fiscal component to this commission that we should be looking at in finance. I realize this isn't the correct committee for that, but and that's the reason I'm asking, is it going to hit? Are we going to see it?
Already went to stand.
Senator Newman, there's not an appropriation in the bill, so money that pays for would come out of the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the public members and for the staffing. So there's not a new appropriation, so I guess that's kind of up to Senator Cohen. I'm not familiar with them taking bills in that don't have an additional appropriation, but Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's gone both ways over the years, I believe. There's a cost that has to be tracked. I mean, normally it would come to finance, not for a lengthy hearing, but where you have legislative pay involved, that's normally a finance issue. But again, this looks like it would be, in terms of the substantive work, would be more of a tax committee bill than a finance bill.
Senator Newman.
Senator Reinert, is there a fiscal note that has been prepared on this bill? And if not, will there be a fiscal note prepared?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, there has not been a fiscal note prepared, but there certainly can be. So far, we've focused on the policy side of it.
You wanted to. We've got two. Apparently, the engrossment missed a change that was made in state and local on line 3.1, and again on line 3.3. Senator Cohen moves that in both places delete 7 and insert 8. Any discussion? That just makes it clear that the 14-member commission, it takes a majority to have a quorum. All in favor of the Cohen oral amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Newman, you want to go to finance with it?
The short answer, Mr. Chairman, is yes.
Okay. Senator Newman moves Senate file number 53 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Doesn't want it.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A little more work for Senator Cohen and his committee. And then I think Senator Cohen, it has to go to the Tax Committee then. Correct?
Well, the question is, it probably doesn't make any difference, although if the appropriation is going to be the Finance Committee, I don't know if that's the last stop or not, but I'll...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
It was originally went to taxes, if you look at the bill, and then it got sent to local government, then it got sent to taxes, back to local government. So I think the intention came here because of the legislators that were appointed to it, but I think the intention was that it should end up in taxes. The finance is maybe an unnecessary.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we heard it in the vision, and the intent was for it to come back to the full committee. That was our intent.
I think that's probably the right path. So, Senator Reiner, you might need a little amendment to it that says the LCC is going to take it out of existing appropriation. And that certainly is the case with per diem of the legislative members. It would have to come out of their respective House and Senate budget, so it's not new money. So you might want to work an amendment to make that clear. Senator Sieben, Senate File 677, the Omnibus Elections Bill, and members, the Elections Committee is a subcommittee of rules. So, Senator Sieben, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe at the appropriate time we'd move that Senate File 677 be refers to the Finance Committee. That's where it's going next, if I'm not mistaken.
I'll recognize that motion by Senator Sieben. Discussion on the bill. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll go over the main article, the articles of the bill, and I'm happy to stand for questions as it relates to each article. Article 1 is two bills that were deal with redistricting. If members recall, last year there were two bills that specifically made these proposed changes, but it was vetoed by the governor due to we did not want redistricting changes to occur right before a state general election. So they pertain to House districts 39A and B, which are in Stillwater, and then also a precinct in Edina, House districts 49A and B. Article 2 of the bill is a main provision. It expands early voting to take place in the state of Minnesota. Early voting, as members know, would replace in-person absentee balloting. Under the proposal, a general idea or general way to think of this is that there would be no voting centers established under this proposed legislation. Instead, voters would be able to vote in primary, general, and special elections for federal, state, or county offices. I'll make a note that that does not include school district elections, from 15 days prior to the election through 5 o'clock on the third day before the election. And the general rationale for this, members, is that, as you know, thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans right now are voting in-person absentee. Early voting saves costs for local election administrators, and I think it adds the convenience that Minnesotans want in terms of being able to vote at a time that is more convenient. Article 3, then, is absentee, no excuse absentee voting. So if members recall, in under Minnesota law right now, a person has to provide a reason why they're going to vote by absentee ballot. And this provision would strike that and say that they do not need to provide an excuse why they would be voting absentee. And then the way these two early voting and absentee balloting measures would work is if you go to your county election office or your city where you normally vote. I'm sorry, not where you normally vote, but where you normally would in-person absentee ballot vote. That would be the place where you could go to now cast an early vote. So you would be vote if you say you showed up a week before the election, you would go to, in my case, Washington County Elections, cast an early ballot, and feed the ballot directly into the ballot box, as opposed to filling out an application for an absentee ballot, submitting that to the election administrator, who would verify it, and then that is accepted or rejected by a ballot board. In other words, it's a much more streamlined process to allow for early voting and no excuse absentee voting. Article 4 deals with two bills regarding vacancies and nomination. Senate File 90 was brought forward by Senator Senjum, Senate File 540 by Senator Rest, and it provides a new process for what would happen if there is a vacancy and nomination for either a partisan or nonpartisan office when a candidate dies or is severely incapacitated. Article 5 is generally referred to as an election administration provision. There are a number of Senate files that are included in here. Some of them that are most noteworthy include expanding authorization for small cities and towns to conduct mail balloting. It would move the threshold from cities with a population of under 400 up to cities or towns up to 1,000 people. It amends the threshold for election recounts paid for with public funds. So right now a recount occurs when the margin is less than half of a percentage point. This would move it down to a quarter of a percentage point. It requires training for polling place challengers. If members recall, challengers are appointed or named by their major political parties. They're not election judges here we're talking about. It just provides for more training for them. It adopts the Uniform Presidential Electors Act. This was not controversial in committee and mainly deals with a process for ensuring that there is a stand-in for the presidential electors. And then there was a variety of standardizing timelines, removing or amending obsolete provisions, and providing clarification also contained in Article 5. Article 6 is Senator Champion's bill that pertains to the loss and restoration of voting rights. This came about, this proposed change comes about as a result of the Election Integrity Task Force, which Senator Mark, or excuse me, Secretary of State Ritchie was a co-chair of this task force that was established by Governor Dayton. It's Senator Chamberlain carried a very similar bill to this last year. And essentially what it does is provides for better notification of felony offenders with the idea that if they're provided more notification, we will cut down on the number of people who mistakenly try to vote or mistakenly believe they're eligible to vote following their offender status moving to a felony level. Article 7 then is the June primary. This was an amendment that was offered in the election subcommittee. It would move the state primary to the first Tuesday following the third Monday in June. So if members recall, the primary now is in August, and this amendment offered by Senator Hoffman would move the primary to June. So that's a real broad overview of the various articles of the bill. I'd note that we do have, I do have some fiscal notes that are coming forward at this time pertaining to different different articles or sections of the bill, but I don't have a complete fiscal note yet at this time.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, on Article 2, does it do anything with mail-in ballots?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Mail-in ballots, some of the rural townships or precincts, that's how they do it. Does it make any changes to that at all?
Senator Gazelka, no, it doesn't. But as I mentioned in Article 5, I believe it is, there is a change in the threshold for the size of small cities or towns that would be allowed to conduct mail-in balloting.
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, and then Senator Sieben, on the early ballot counts, does that become public knowledge as they come in, or is it do they wait till the end?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, just like absentee ballots right now to protect the identity of voters, for instance, there are no vote totals that are published until election night after the polls close.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, as long as we have Ms. Frazier at the table, we have in this bill, assuming it is ultimately adopted and signed, we will in Minnesota have mail-in voting. We would have early voting. We would have in-person absentee ballots. We would have not in-person absentee balloting. And I'm just wondering, Ms. Frazier, if you could walk the committee through the various timelines that each of these kinds of voting procedures that would be available. Walk us through the various timelines that both the voters and those who are handling the voting, such as election judges and auditors, et cetera, that we would have to keep track of these various timelines. Would you be able to do that for us?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. Under this bill, 46 days before the election, absentee ballots would be mailed to voters who had already applied for them, and mail ballots would be sent to mail ballot voters. So voters who wanted to vote in person absentee would have the opportunity at that time to go to their county or city clerk's office to vote in person absentee. And that would continue until the 16th day before the election. In the evening of the 16th day before the election, early voting starts on the 15th day. So to be sure that there's no confusion between absentee votes and early votes, as of the 16th day before the election, absentee ballots cast at that point are considered final. And election officials would have the opportunity, if they so chose, to begin processing absentee ballots that had been accepted, by opening the envelopes and feeding the ballots into the machine. Again, no votes will be counted until election night. I should have backed up and said that under current law, absentee ballots, as they're received within a few days of receipt, need to be examined by an absentee ballot board made up of election judges of two different major political parties to ensure that absentee ballots meet the legal requirements. And if ballots do meet the legal requirements, they're marked as accepted. If they don't, they're marked as rejected, and election officials are required to send a replacement ballot to the voter. As of 15 days before the election, we would begin early voting. And so a person who came into their city clerk or county auditor's office would have the opportunity to early vote, not to vote in person absentee. And so they would, as you would in the polling place, announce themselves, provide their name and address, be provided with a ballot, fill it out, and actually put it into the ballot box. Those votes are considered final when they're cast, and that would continue through the third day before the election, which is Saturday. So through Saturday, voters would have the opportunity to vote in-person absentee, or I'm sorry, early. And early voting would also be required under this bill to be offered that Saturday as well as the previous Saturday as well as one weeknight evening up until 8 p.m., giving voters a number of different opportunities to come in and cast an early vote. All of the absentee ballots and early votes cast through that point need to be marked on the roster so that if any of those voters were to come into the polling place, election judges know that their ballot has already been cast and counted, and so that they will be told, I'm sorry, your vote's already been counted. You're not allowed to vote today. To ensure that that happens on the day before the election, voters who come into the county auditor or city clerk's office would be given an absentee ballot instead of early voting. An absentee ballot allows election officials to put the ballot aside until they have an opportunity to either check with the election judges at the polling place or wait until the rosters are returned to ensure that the person didn't vote in person before counting the ballot, to ensure that nobody gets more than one vote counted. On election day itself, there is no in-person absentee voting or early voting, just as under current law. Of course, absentee ballots may be received in the mail, and voters may go to their polling place to vote. At 8 p.m. on election night, when the polls close, then the absentee and early votes may be tallied, and those results would be reported along with the votes cast in person in the polling place.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Frazier. The reason I asked Ms. Frazier to outline the time is I think that in all likelihood, she's probably the only person in the room who really understands the complexities of the voting in the state of Minnesota that we are creating. And I simply wanted to try and illustrate for you what is happening here and ask that you begin to think about, as we go forward with this bill, that I see lots and lots of voters within the state of Minnesota that simply are not going to understand the various voting procedures. And I would anticipate that there are going to be a lot of auditors and a lot of election judges and poll watchers and challengers that are also involved in our election system that are not going to understand. Because I would hazard to guess that I could ask any legislator sitting at the table right now to, in a very cogent manner, explain what Ms. Frazier just told us. And I think that we would have to. So I think what my point that I'm trying to make is be aware of the complexities in the election system that we are creating with this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Zeeman.
Thank you. If I could respond to Senator Newman. I think that the main point here is that early voting would begin 15 days before the general election. And that is important for, certainly that will be an education campaign that needs to take place with the voters of Minnesota. But if you keep in mind that there are literally hundreds of thousands of people that right now believe, either erroneously or not, that they can go to vote early. Minnesotans think they can already do that. They're showing up at their county election places and saying, I'm here to vote. So Minnesotans right now, in many thousands of cases, part of this, as we saw in committee, and I didn't bring it with me, the major political parties in some cases are even promoting, are asking voters to go vote early when under current law they're not, unless they provide a valid excuse, they're not permitted to do so. So yes, when you go through this timeline of when you look at when ballots would be accepted, when the ballot boards would meet, it does sound, when absentee balloting begins, it sounds more complicated than it really is. There'd still be absentee balloting for people who are not in their polling place or, you know, living in another state or serving abroad. Those timelines don't change. The major difference is when, if we institute early voting, instead of showing up at a election center to say, I'd like to vote now, and then what's currently happening, and this is why the local election administrators and the county support these changes, is that the voter is casting an absentee ballot. They're saying they're going to be gone from the polling place, when in reality some of them are not really gone on that Tuesday that's election day. So the method, the early voting and the no-excuse absentee voting proposed here really is simplifying the system to Minnesotans. It's saying beginning 15 days before the election, you can vote early. And instead of casting an absentee ballot, which is hard to explain why you have to fill out an application, put it in a secrecy envelope, have it signed by a witness, submitted to the election judges. We heard testimony, if you recall, in committee that some local government officials estimate that casting one absentee ballot can cost in excess of $5 to $8 per ballot. So that's why the local governments, again, are supportive of these changes, because if you can show up and cast a regular ballot starting 15 days before the election, then you're saving all of that administrative cost and overhead. So, yes, the timeline sounds complicated when you walk through it like that, but really the main thing that we'll have to educate Minnesotans about is that beginning the 15th day before the election, early voting begins, and if we make these changes, Minnesotans, again, hundreds of thousands are already doing it, would be able to cast a regular ballot. The one downside that I didn't say earlier, that I don't really think it's a downside myself, but some do, is that if we move to this system of early voting, you would not be able to change your mind. So if you cast a ballot 13 days before the election, something happened in a whatever that made you decide a last debate or whatever that you wanted to change your mind, you wouldn't be able to do that. Now, in the last election, presidential election, the city of Minneapolis told me that they had one person who came in and wanted to change their mind. So if you're a voter who thinks that you may not be 100% sure, you should wait till election day. But otherwise, I don't see any downside.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, Senator Sieben, you mentioned it's going to take some educating of our election officials. But, if you go back a number of years, 20 years or so, society today is so much more complex in terms of people want options. Husband and wives, families go off to work. They take their children to daycare. They have busy lives. And in the case of some of our children that live in North Dakota, they have early voting. They love it. They use it because they can work things in into their lives. Their election or their voting is become such a natural part of their everyday life. And the same way with the mail-in ballot, I think I was one of the authors of the original mail-in ballot as a result of the small county, Kitson County, because they were losing population and they ended up deciding to go that route or wanted to go that route. What has happened is that it's taken off where many, many places are using the mail-in ballot because it's convenient, but also because it saves money. And, there you mentioned that they can't change their lives or their vote. That's true with the mail-in ballot as well. So I think today we need to think about the voters and the options that they might be most comfortable with in terms of how do you facilitate them to go and vote rather than how can you make it so difficult that they don't want to vote. And I think some of these changes would be readily acceptable to most of the public, I think.
Senator Hamm. Senator Newman.
Yeah. To Senator Stump's point, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't necessarily disagree with you. What I question is whether or not we need mail-in ballots and absentee ballots. I question whether we need in-person absentee balloting and early voting. I just wonder if we don't have a duplication of efforts and multiple methods of voting where we could maybe simplify it a little bit. But to your general point that we should be trying to make it convenient for the voters, I agree with, so long as we can protect the integrity of the system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Sieben. The absentee balloting and the early voting, what differences are there in the kind of identification a voter has to produce to vote in each of those two different ways?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, in early voting, the normal, you can just think of it as what you would provide on election day applies. So whatever means of identification you use to identify yourself at the polling place would be the same as it occurred in early voting location, which again are just government offices where absentee balloting occurs right now. Under the provisions, under absentee balloting, when you're mailed an application, and Beth can correct me, Ms. Frazier can correct me if I'm wrong, when you're mailed an application under changes that were made a couple years back as a result of legislation that was signed by Governor Pawlenty, you provide either your driver's license number, last four digits of your Social Security number, or your state ID card on your absentee ballot, and that would be the same that would be provided under this because the absentee ballot so let me just back up a second. So during the period of early voting, you would be casting an early vote if you show up in person. There would not be a choice as if you show up to your county election office whether you wanted to vote in person, absentee ballot, or early vote. Under this legislation, you would be early voting. But if the ballot is being mailed to you, for instance, or you're outside the window of when early voting occurs, for instance, the Monday right before the election, then you would be casting an in-person absentee ballot. And you would fill out the absentee ballot form as I described earlier.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. And Senator Sieben, it seems to me then that one of the central differences is that in the early voting, there really is no identification that's required, since there is really no identification required when you just vote in person. I've never been asked to produce any identification, for example, when I voted. So that to me is a central difference, I think, that should be identified here in these two things. I'm a little concerned, as Senator Newman has pointed out, that we've got these different structures. You did mention the cost of absentee balloting that might be a reason to perhaps discourage that, but if we go to the no excuses absentee balloting, it would seem to me that that would likely result in more absentee balloting, but you've mentioned that there was a cost to do that, which I assume is related to the security of making sure that you've got it identified and the ballot being protected in the course of its being maintained. I guess I'm just not quite clear on, as Senator Newman has indicated, exactly why we're increasing the complexity and what is the gain that we're gaining from doing this. It's not making a lot of sense to me.
Ms. Frazier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Hahn. Prior to 2010, there was no opportunity or requirement that absentee voters provide any sort of identification number. Prior to 2010, absentee voters just wrote down their name and their address and signed the oath and on the application, and then similarly on the absentee ballot envelope, and then had a witness sign it as well. What happened was in 2008, during the recount, the U.S. Senate recount, there was a lot of discussion about signature matches, because prior to that point, election judges had to compare signatures, the signature on the application to the signature on the envelope, to be sure that they were submitted by the same person. And what we found is that while our 30,000 volunteer election judges are great public servants and do receive training, they're not trained in handwriting analysis, and that they could not tell when somebody did the "this is my have all, when I have all day" signature and "this is my I'm in a hurry" signature, that they were the same. And so what the legislature decided to do in 2010 was to instead ask voters for an ID number. so that it could be compared from the absentee ballot application to the absentee ballot envelope. It's basically a PIN or a password. It's not actually compared to any other database. It's not verified that it actually is the person's ID number. It could instead be the person's mother's maiden name, and it would serve the same function. It's seeing whether the application and the envelope were submitted by the same person. And like the voters are asked to supply an ID number, but are not required to do so if they don't have one handy. And so there are still some voters for whom the absentee ballot boards compare signatures. So that's the purpose of the ID number piece. The, you know, early voting is in-person voting. And so somebody has to go in, say their name, say their address, appear in person. And as Mr. McGrath from Minnesota Majority has said, in-person voting is the gold standard when it comes to election integrity. Every state surrounding us, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, has early voting, as do a total of 32 states. And 25 of those states have both in-person or have both early voting and no excuse absentee voting. We believe that those work best in concert.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ann.
Thank you. And Ms. Fraser, do any of those other states require an identification to vote in person or early vote?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Senator Han, I don't know.
Members, we should get the committee report in front of us. Senator Sieben moves adoption of the staff-prepared committee document, CE2, as the subcommittee report to get it into the Senate file. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Any other discussion on Senate file 677 as amended?
Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I like most of the bill. I'm not really fond of the June primary. I'm not sure why we want to extend the election season, but I'm glad you're taking care of some of the things like the no-excuse absentee voting. I know I've seen, as you point out, political parties. I remember even 15 years ago they were encouraging their people, if it's more convenient, vote absentee, which is not a legal use. So, and the people who refused to vote absentee because they didn't technically fall in the thing were the ones who are the most cautious citizens who think that, you know, we may be voting illegally from doing this when others are just willingly do it. It seems to me if people need to, and I think you'll save a lot of hassle and money and make things better and just as accurate and fair with the early voting. I'm not sure I agree with Senator, whoever it was, Senator Newman, who said, I don't know why you need it the same place to vote absentee or early voting, but I understand your point that some days early voting won't be open. I'd like us to move more towards that than having them both at the same days. But
Mr. Chair and Senator Wright,
Sieben,
to that point, the bills that I had sponsored in the past or a bill that I sponsored in the past would establish vote centers, so it would authorize the county to establish a voting center, which may be located outside of a traditional place where the public can vote now, for instance, at shopping malls or in other places. And after hearing some concerns from folks about that, we decided it might be a prudent step to take a more modest approach and first do this with the see how it works, and then perhaps in the future look at having voting centers established in different areas.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I wasn't arguing in favor of it. I was just saying that while there are some people who need absentee voting because they can't go to a polling place or whatever for a variety of reasons, health or whatever, or being out of town, I'm just saying that I don't think it's a huge problem in the bill, because I think if I show up at Roseville City Hall to vote a week before the election, I'll vote early voting because it's a lot simpler and so on, and it saves the city money, I'm sure. But nevertheless, I don't know why you offer the same two at the same place. I understand that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Moretti, they wouldn't be offered concurrently. So the point is that during the early voting period, you would vote early. You would cast an early ballot. But there are still periods of time where absentee balloting is available, as in current law, starting 46 days before the election. This bill does not propose to start early voting 46 days before the election. So during the early voting period, you could only cast an early vote ballot. You would not cast an in-person absentee ballot.
Mr. Chair, I misunderstood that. That makes more sense.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would be the latest time that you would have to decide? I'm thinking about the June primary. So if you count backwards, when would a candidate have to have made that decision? Not that I'm running for anything, but.
Senator Steven.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, it would back the timing up similarly to when we just moved it back in relation to the August primary. So I don't have my timeline with me in terms of when candidate filing would begin. Do you know?
Well, I'm looking at the bottom or the section 23 on page 29. It talks about 16 weeks before the state primary.
Mr. Chair and
Ms. Fraser,
Senator Stumpf, I believe that filing would be in late March, perhaps into early April.
It's early to decide.
So sometime by the end of March, roughly.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Today. Today.
Oh, better run over to your office.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad Senator Stumpf asked that question. It was similar to the question I asked. A lot of times, and I can only speak for legislators, but a lot of times legislators they haven't really talked to their families. They haven't figured out what they really want to do in life as far as the next election. I can see where some of them will even wait till the end of the session to kind of roll it around their heads to see if they want to. I could see actually a candidate filing for office, filing to run. He gets endorsed by his party shortly thereafter at a precinct caucus. And then toward the end of the session, if it's a cantankerous session, he's at that point where he's just so frustrated he wants to get out, and he can't because the deadline for taking your name off the ballot is not existing for him anymore. And it's one of those things that we got to keep our eyes wide open as we think about this. And I don't know if there's any opportunity to change the timeline or change an opportunity that if we move it back really early, if we can actually give an escape hatch to someone who wants to get out. So those are just some of the things we're going to have to plan a little differently. And, of course, as a lot of the legislators that are down here voting, there's going to be someone in your hometown criticizing every one of your votes in live time with Twitters and with email and everything else they have now. And any omnibus bill that has both good and bad in will be exploited. And especially our rural legislators probably won't have an opportunity to go back home and campaign as hard as their competitor is. So eyes wide open is a good caution.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Fraser?
I found the timeline, and the filing period, if this were in place for 2014, would be March 25th to April 8th.
Just passed a bonding bill.
Short session.
Right. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I should.
Senator Stephen.
That's the timeline for next year, but I would point out that the effective date for the primary here is 2016, so it would be. I just wanted to clarify that it would not apply for this next most immediate cycle.
In the House.
Any other discussion?
I should have my website up by then.
Senator Sieben moves Senate File 677 as amended be recommended
roll call,
to pass
Mr. Chair.
And re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Roll call being requested. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bach.
Yes.
Senator Cohen. Senator Fischbach. Senator Gazelka. Senator Hahn.
No.
Senator Limmer.
No.
Senator Marty.
Yeah.
Senator Metzen. Senator Newman. Senator Pappas.
Yes.
Senator Sieben.
Yes.
Senator Skoy.
Yes.
Senator Stumpf.
Yes.
Being six ayes and three nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and re-referred to the Finance Committee. Committee is adjourned. Members, I think we may have to meet tomorrow with a for a